Okay, this is a poem class for Dogen. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the one I chose is called Everyday Life, Walking, Standing, Sitting, Sleeping. Here's how it goes. Not seeming to protect the paddy field, scarecrow standing on the hillside, by no means useless. So, yeah, it seems simple enough. It seemed that, I think it was introduced as having been a poem for an aristocrat of some kind.
The wife. I think she said it was for the wife of the shogun, of the regent.
Yeah, so that might have felt, so apparently the person felt useless, and maybe even more so given what I assume was the status of women in those days and who was yet royalty. So on that level, it could be saying nobody's useless and you're doing something important. But but the more I stayed with it, the more it felt a lot deeper than that. I mean, not that that isn't deep. It's nice to notice that we, every one of us, whatever our position, is already part of the world and already contributing to it and already reflecting everything in the world. That itself is pretty deep, but, and I also got that, and why did it speak to me? Because that's, I think that's a very human thing that I often feel like, am I doing enough? Am I being useful? Ask those questions. And then I got into the Bindoa, and I came back to that refrain that Dogen keeps coming to about when one person sits zazen, the whole world wakes up and sits zazen with them. It reverberates like a hammer striking emptiness, reverberates endlessly. And how useless sitting zazen can seem. And there's even a way of talking about it. Uchiyama Roshi was fond of saying that it is useless. There's no point to sitting zazen. Suzuki Roshi said things like that. So in one sense, zazen gets us out of our purpose-driven head. It gets us out of that purpose. But in another sense, if we're so connected with all beings, we're waking all beings up and waking up with them, reverberating endlessly, then it's the most useful thing possible. The idea that the zazen is sitting with all beings is something I've begun to take more and more on faith, that when I first heard it, it sounded both logical in one way and illogical in the other. We're all so connected. We're completely connected. So, of course, we're all sitting together when one person sits. And in another way, the experience of sitting is subjective. How could we all be sitting together? That makes no sense. And so my approach is now to just feel that. And it feels right. It feels that that's true to me somehow. So that's why I chose this poem, because the scarecrow standing seems to do nothing, but the scarecrow is actually protecting the paddy field. Just like when we vow to sit with all beings, and we actually do sit with all beings.
Does anybody have any comment on that or response to what Steve said?
That was really good. That question comes up for me. What's useful? Am I being useful? And I like the way that you unraveled that or unpacked that. I thought was very good.
Thank you.
It made me think about, I've been reading that section each night before I go to bed. You know, the part that starts on page 21 and goes through to, it's the part that they say has been excerpted and chanted, you know, in Zen centers. And I think I heard Norman say that they do it at Tassajara sometimes or somewhere where he sits, but where you're talking about everything reverberating And it goes into the long thing about the walls and the chairs and the trees and the branches. Mm-hmm. And it's just sort of like, that hit me some way, in a way that it hadn't before. And I hadn't seen that poem because I didn't print out that particular thing, but it strikes me too that I've had that question a lot. What good is this just sitting here? Well, there's all this suffering going on in the world. And it may, you know, whenever I see someone, like we just saw a program a little while ago about Chef Andre and the World Food Kitchen. And I'm thinking, oh, I've got to go sign up for the World Food Kitchen, and then I'll know I'm being useful. Or I'll go volunteer at the shelter. Those things, you know, that's a very literal way of understanding useful. And this poem informs me in a different way, which I think you talked really well about. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
What strikes me is what I think you touched on it at the beginning, but that what you said is very useful. And I thought the scarecrow is completely scarecrowing. It's completely doing its job. And then magically in that process, it's helpful, it's useful. You know, without anything extra, it's just doing its job. That's all.
Maybe without attachment to results, even if the crow lands on top of it and perches on its shoulder, it's still a scarecrow.
Yeah.
Great point.
Is it a scarecrow if it doesn't scare crows?
Ooh.
Scares as much as a scarecrow could if a scarecrow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
All right, I'll stop. That's a tongue twister. How much wood can a woodchuck chuck?
If a woodchuck could chuck wood.
He'd chuck as much as a woodchuck could if a woodchuck could chuck wood. Hey, between the two of us. Okay. So, Kate or Liam?
There were several I was looking at in particular, but one was called Seclusion, which is on that second page of what you printed. Evening Zazen hours advance. Sleep hasn't come yet. More and more I realize mountain forests are good for efforts in the way. Sounds of the valley brook enter the ears. Moonlight pierces the eyes. Outside this, not one further instant of thought. It's what I associated was, you know, camping out two or three nights in the Sierras or Point Reyes and just how grounding and nourishing just the sounds of the wild being surrounded for an extended period of time. I don't know that I had a whole lot more to say about it. Pretty straightforward, I think, in the poem.
Mm-hmm. Kate or Steve, do you have anything that you want to say about this? I mean, we could all read it with you, but did you read it twice?
I don't remember. I can read it again.
Okay, especially if you're giving a talk, it's a good practice because sometimes it goes by so fast that it's helpful to people if you read it a second time. You know, we all have it in front of us. So. But why don't you go ahead and read it a second time anyway?
It's titled Seclusion. Evening Zazen hours advance. Sleep hasn't come yet. More and more I realize mountain forests are good for efforts in the way. Sounds of the valley brook enter the ears, moonlight pierces the eyes. Outside this, not one further instant of thought. So, I could say it's about Zazen, just seeing, just hearing.
I think it's interesting that sentence, sleep hasn't come yet, It's just stated as a fact. I don't know if the narrator was trying to sleep and couldn't, or whether the narrator is happy that they're not sleeping because they're able to do zazen. But most likely, it's just the sleep hasn't come. If they're really doing zazen, then they're just not sleeping, even if it is late in the evening. And another little trick in it that I like is the last line, I don't know if, well, trick or, you know, subtlety, outside this, not one further instant of thought. So this, what is this? Is this the sound of the valley brook entering the ears and the moonlight piercing the eyes? Does this mean the poem? Does this mean I just noticed that sleep hasn't come? Or which part of the poem is this, or is this this? I don't think we have to answer, but I like that. I quite like the outside this.
Well, and I, you know, forests are good for efforts in the way. I have a forest for my front yard now, and it's good for my effort. It's there's something about living with those big trees every day that encourages my efforts. And I don't really know how to explain that. I mean, when I lived in Benicia, I had a lovely backyard and we landscaped it and I noticed things, and but I was always busy all the time. I mean, sometimes I actually, when I was very stressed at work, I would come home and I would walk outside and just lay down on the ground to rest, I think. And now I'm not so much in need of that rest, that kind of, I don't, it's so hard to put words on these things, but there's something about those trees every day, you know, and I step out on the deck every night and I look at those trees and I look at the sky, and that feels like practice. It isn't separate from my practice, and it feels, I'm much more aware of them as being living beings that aren't separate from me in the way that I used to perceive things being separate from me. So I like that line very much.
It just took me to Tassajara. That's all, sitting in the zendo in the evening, surrounded by trees and the creek and moonlight sometimes. And evening zazen hours advance, and then sleep hasn't come yet, I'm not sure. But I think sometimes they used to sit until the most senior person left. So when the most senior person got, you know, really got sleepy, they'd get up and go wherever and go to bed. So that may be kind of what he's, you know, that he hasn't been overtaken by sleep yet, so he's keeping sitting. I don't know. But evening zazen hours advance, there's something so peaceful about that. And mountain forests are good for efforts in the way. And the sounds of the valley brook do enter the ears. Sometimes the kind of softly at Tassajara, sometimes loud, especially when the side creek, Kabarga Creek, is roaring along. And since you have to walk to the zendo, you're aware of the moon, of the phases of the moon, especially if it's hitting the valley, because sometimes it's kind of behind the hills. You know, the moon changes from night to night where it rises. So down in the bottom of that canyon, you may or may not see it, but you'll see the light. I'm not sure what, I don't know what, I have theory, idea about what the this is, but I don't really know. But it's just that it's evokes for me just this peaceful feeling of sitting in a zendo, surrounded by all of this, these trees and the brook and the moon, and they're entering the zendo to some extent. It literally, when it's windy in the fall, you know, there's I don't know, little pine cones and debris and twigs and you name it, that sounds like the rain sometimes. Anyway, thank you for this, Steve. It just gave me great pleasure of nostalgia for some of the times, some of the evenings, anyway.
Actually, Liam read it.
Thank you, Liam. Kate?
I actually chose the one just after that called Snow. What I did was I read these a couple of times and I just chose the one that got me in the gut the most. So, Snow. All my life, false and real, right and wrong tangled, playing with the moon, ridiculing wind, listening to birds, many years wasted, seeing the mountain covered with snow. This winter, I suddenly realize snow makes a mountain. I think what struck me.
Why don't you read it a second time?
Okay, I will. All my life, false and real, right and wrong tangled, playing with the moon, ridiculing wind, listening to birds, many years wasted, seeing the mountain covered with snow. This winter, I suddenly realize snow makes a mountain. I think it speaks to any moment of realization for me. I have that feeling of many years wasted. Oh, how could I have been so blind? Or how could I have not seen something so simple or noticed the wind in the trees more often? How could I have been looking for something out there when the snow makes a mountain? You know, I had been reading before practice period some writings by Charlotte Joko Beck, and it made me think of also, she referred to a poem about, and I won't read it, but part of it was just snow falling on cedars. Mm-hmm. And she said, students ask her all the time, do you know the meaning of life? And she said, of course I know the meaning of life. Just snow falling on cedars. So for me, this speaks to some realization about everything wasn't what I thought, because it was just thoughts. And there's some different understanding now. It's like these blue mountains are walking. It's the same kind of feeling to me. The snow makes a mountain. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Does it need to, though?
Of course.
Oh. Oh, sorry, excuse me.
No, I grew up with lawyers. So I had to I actually do think it, you know, it, that kind of thinking and my father could prove the existence of God based on philosophy that he'd read, and I didn't know how to, it didn't quite make sense to me, but I didn't know how to argue it.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't need to make sense. Now, no offense to the lawyers in the room.
We're used to it.
Yes.
Yep, Liam and Steve. Steve and Liam?
Well, I had a brief note that I had jotted down on one of Enkyo's comments that that kind of makes me see it a little differently than I might have otherwise. She made a comment about fully embodying who we are. And so then I'm looking at the first lines, all my life, false and real, right and wrong, tangled. Well, that's my life. That's my life too. And it's not, then there was that, and now there's something different.
Mm-hmm.
That was really useful, Liam. Thank you.
Yeah, she included that one.
I remember when we were watching that together, and she shows that, I think it was towards the end of the seminar, and I thought, oh, that's the one that I chose. I should go back and listen to it, and then I didn't make the time.
I like that it's actually very playful too. So it has these sort of, actually, the lines seem to alternate between playfulness and seriousness. The first line is, all my life, false and real, right and wrong, tangled. Sounds very serious. Next one is, playing with the moon, ridiculing wind, listening to the birds.
Yeah.
The next one gets serious again. Many years wasted. And then the last one is playful again. Realize the snow makes a mountain. And yet that's also the one that culminates and makes the point by being playful and serious at once. Yeah, it's a little bit comical to me to imagine that there's no mountain. It's just snow. It's all just snow. And I liked how you linked that with, it's all just thoughts, Kate, when you were doing your presentation.
I just love that line, playing with the moon, ridiculing wind, and listening to birds. And snow makes a mountain. I imagine, at least where he was in Ahaji, all the mountains had snow on them. You know, he wasn't near the coast or something. So snow makes a mountain. Reminds me of that poem that Mel loves about the all day long, the white cloud depends on the mountain, and the blue mountain depends on the white cloud, but they don't hinder each other. The snow makes a mountain. What makes you, you? Or what makes a bird different from a fish? I know lots of mountains that don't have snow. More and more I know mountains that don't have snow. But it seems like he's saying that the snow defines a mountain, which for him was probably true. I don't know. I mean, we can't call him up. And anyway, we get to say what it means, because that's the nature of the situation. Anybody else? Any more? There's so many. What?
Did you pick one?
Yeah, well, I think my problem is everyone I picked these to begin with. I just want to say, I want to talk about one of the moon ones, but just this is so great. Everyone admires a graceful horse galloping past the streaming sunlight. Realize that this fleeting image is itself the way of Dharma. It's on the, it's the second poem on the first page. Everyone admires a graceful horse galloping past the streaming sunlight, but few realize that this fleeting image is itself the way of Dharma. We forget that, but we sort of know it. You know, it's like a, it reminds me of things, you know, where you see a movie and then you realize it's all stills, and they say that that's the way of the world. We just think it's all moving. And that this poem, this is the one. This is the one he compiled on his way to, it's on the page, I have this double. 1, 2, 3, page 4. The top of the page says, more not used in class by Dogen. Did I give you that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And then it starts on seeing the harvest moon.
Yes, that's the one. Well, and that was my contextualizing it. You know, he did not die in the temple. He died in Kyoto. So he was pretty sick. He'd been lying in bed for a long time, actually, and they persuaded him to go to Kyoto. And they would have been going through the mountains. And coming down, Kyoto is surrounded by, I don't know if they're like big hills or mountains. You know, eventually they become mountains. Just when my longing to see the moon over Kyoto one last time grows deepest, the image I behold this autumn night leaves me sleepless for its beauty. Just when my longing to see the moon over Kyoto one last time grows deepest, the image I behold this autumn night leaves me sleepless for its beauty. What's to say? You can see, can't you? I hope, you know, some experience of yours seeing the moon suddenly so beautiful you're speechless. When I lived at Tassajara 1 year, I lived up on the hillside. You walk up some stone kind of rough stairs, and there are three cabins up there. And the thing is that gets you up high enough that you almost always see the moon when it's full. And to do the full moon ceremony and then go home and sit on a little bench on my little porch and watch the moon rise, that's the image for me. Sometimes here, the moon rises and I'm sitting outside waiting for the dog to do her business and I'm watching the moon through the pepper tree. It's really beautiful. And I don't know what your image is, but this really speaks to me. The image I behold this autumn night leaves me sleepless where its beauty. Anybody?
I can't help commenting again on the use of language that first he speaks of the moon over Kyoto, and then when he's longing for it, and then when he actually sees it, he doesn't repeat the word moon. He says, the image I behold this autumn night, as if it's too much to say the moon again.
It is. It is too much.
I love that.
Yeah. What's your, do you have any experiences of being moved to your heart by seeing the moon?
No, nothing stands out like that. I love the moon in general. Every time I see it, it moves me a little bit, but I don't have some one experience that stands out.
I actually remember, this just came to me as you were talking about this. One night after the full, maybe it was before the full, I don't know what the timing would have been, but there, when I drove from the temple back home to Benicia on 780, there's a beautiful panoramic view there, and it was one full moon ceremony night, and there was this enormous harvest moon low in the sky. And it's filling my heart to remember that drive. I had several moments on that drive after being there, not all with the moon, but different experiences.
Different times, different drives, or that one drive?
Different drives that stirred my memory of, I did that quite a bit. So, but that harvest moon was, that image I beheld, left me sleepless.
Yeah.
Kind of like Steve, there isn't one specific memory, although more in general, the times when I've seen a full moon, either when I'm camping or at the beach, and just, there's something just very pure about the experience. It's very moving that way. I mean, it's beautiful when I see it in the neighborhood, but there's something a little different about that.
Okay. Just enjoy it. We'll be having a full moon pretty soon, I guess. I don't know. Did we just have one? So sometime in November. Anyway. It's 7 o'clock and we can certainly stop, but is there anything, does anybody want to read a second one, seeing as how I indulge myself? The one about the horses was Dave Delaney's favorite, and it's always stayed with me. He really loved that poem. Anyway, yes, you?
Yeah, I see why he loved that poem. I thought that was going to be my choice until it wasn't. But this one, I found this one difficult.
Which one?
Oh, I'm about to read it. Okay. Kate, did you say something? No?
Okay. No, go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm good.
This one is, I don't know, you may not have the handout. This is exactly the same handout I was reading before. It's the one right above the one I read before on page 3 of the handout from the seminar. It's titled Mountain Seclusion. I won't even stop at the valley's brook for fear that my shadow may flow into the world. I won't even stop at the valley's brook for fear that my shadow may flow into the world. I don't know, what's there to fear? I don't get fear. I see the word fear right there in the center of it, but as I read it, I know, I guess Dogen could have been joking, but it doesn't seem like he's much of a joker either, not even here. I'm just curious how other people respond to it. I don't quite get this one.
I remember it. I loved it. I don't know. It just seemed like he was being...
Right now, everybody's kind of freezing up for me, so I am going to leave and re-enter.
Okay.
I think we're having some hinky internet, so I'll be back.
Hinky. That's the word. See, that was used in a movie where Tommy Lee Jones told, in a movie called The Fugitive, Tommy Lee Jones told they were investigating somebody, I don't want to go into the whole movie, but Tommy Lee Jones said to another cop, he said, "Don't say hinky. You mean bullshit, right?"
"You mean what?"
"Bullshit."
"Oh."
"You mean bullshit. Just say bullshit."
"Well, that's them country people. That's how they talk, them country people. She's spent too much time with them country people."
It's a colorful word. Anyone can say bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Can you hear us?
I see you all.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Were you able
Would
to hear
you
the poem?
Reading that poem one more time?
No problem.
No.
It's, "I won't even stop." Wait, look, don't. It doesn't start with "it's." "I won't even stop at the valley's brook for fear that my shadow may flow into the world." And I was saying that I get the image, I get the shadow, I get the brook. I mean, that's, the images come to me and they seem actually rather peaceful. I don't find fear in it. So maybe I'm a little stuck on the word fear. So that's why I wanted to bring this up, because it's a little bit difficult.
I hear like a kind of a discipline or something. It's called mountain seclusion.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kind of discipline in staying in that mountain seclusion. And there's some temptation to flow back into the world, maybe, or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Me too, something like that. Something about also about a vow or a statement of intention, you know, but also that I have to watch myself, that I don't get, you know, tempted by the things of the world or something like that.
Yeah, with that kind of background.
That rings true.
Just think, with that kind of background and education that he had in Kyoto and the Waka poems and all that, there might be something that was kind of nice about that. He might miss it at a time or something.
Right. Well, his, you know, he was born there and you know, grew up there until his mother died anyway. Does anybody else have another one to read?
I'll read one short one, and I just said something brief. It's on the first page from the presentation, Upaya Zen Center, the second poem. "Even in sentient beings, such as grasses and trees, wither today. Seeing this in front of our eyes, how can we not grieve?" The first thing it brought to mind, I know Buddhism probably isn't the only religion in the world that includes everything. A lot of indigenous people's faiths do, but I just always appreciate that Buddhism really includes everything, all beings, grasses. It's just so lacking in our culture today that it's painful. So that's kind of my main hit from that, is just my personal appreciation of that.
Also about death, I do believe.
Yes.
Why do you think it's about death, Mary?
Because it's about withering. Isn't it? I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, even in sentient beings, such as grasses and trees wither today. Seeing this in front of our eyes, how can we not grieve? And about suffering, they're suffering, withering. How can we not feel for them?
So that it's natural to grieve. It seems like with grief, we often feel like we need to be done with it, or there's some end to it. And my experience is that there's no end to it, really. It just changes.
Yep.
The other day, Sunny called me over to the kitchen window, and there was a sharp-shinned hawk on the ground that had just made a kill. Mm-hmm. And he had his wings out. He looked magnificent, magnificent. I mean, it was so moving. And then he lifted off, and there was this little squirrel And it just broke my heart. And it was everything. I volunteered at a wildlife museum in Walnut Creek for a while on the raptor team. And I know that only 25% of all raptors that are born in the world make it to be adults. So when I saw that bird, like, I thought, yeah, go for it, you know. And then he lifts off and there's the squirrel, and I'm like, oh. It was like everything, you know. I grieved for the squirrel and I cheered for the hawk.
Yeah.
And that's, I've always wanted to turn away, I think, or I think the inclination on my part in the past is, I don't want anything to die because it's so beautiful. But that's what happens. And the whole experience was actually very moving. It didn't feel wrong or upsetting, or, and I felt real grief. And I can't think of a word for what I felt for that hawk, but it was like the creator and the destroyer all at once.
Yeah, I was thinking it. And unfortunately, the word awesome is way overused. So it doesn't mean much of anything anymore, but sounds awesome, really awesome. That's my word. You don't have to have that word. It sounds amazing.
Will you say that again, please, Mary?
Amazing. The word awesome is way, it sounds like it was truly awesome. But the word is so overused, yeah. It doesn't mean anything anymore. Kate, do you have any that you want to read, another one that you'd like to read? Or it's not required.
No, I think everybody read all the ones that I picked out.
Okay. Shall we close, or are you looking for one? No, she's not frozen.
I was just glancing to see if there was something that, you know, particularly I had put a mark next to, or, but everything I put a mark next to, we've already read and discussed. So I'm good with these. I'm going to actually go to that, website and print out the handout that came with the seminar, because I hadn't done that.
Yeah, I think I sent you guys a link with it, but I was looking, I didn't see it. So you should just go to the seminar and you can do it that way.
Yeah, I've got it bookmarked, that seminar, so I can go and listen to the other parts of it.
For disporting oneself freely in this samadhi, practicing zazen in upright posture is the true gate. Although this dharma is abundantly inherent in each person, it is not manifested without practice. It is not attained without something. I didn't write the rest of the sentence.
Realization.
Okay.
Right.
Hasta mañana.
Hasta
mañana.